Hi, I'm Tracy. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Tracy.
I wanted to talk about the archway we're building. So it involves pretty much all the steps, but specifically in the big book, it's this concept of the archway to spiritual freedom. It's first mentioned on page 17. So about a third of the way down the middle paragraph, the feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement which binds us. But that in itself would never have held us together as we are now joined. So the powerful cement that binds us is a mixture of equal parts fellowship, our common problem, and this book, our common solution. And later on, page 47, we look at step two, agnostics, the cornerstone, the belief, the faith that comes is the beginning of that. And then right at the top of the archway is the keystone, which gets mentioned. It's the third step, page 62, which is the beginning of the death of self, the beginning of the death of ego, and the beginning of the decision to live a life based on faith rather than fear. And this time around, working the steps, I really feel I've had an experience with this concept. It's my second time through, and I've just completed step seven. So I thought it would be kind of fun for us all to just visualize those 12 steps in that format. So at the bottom, we have the cement, the foundation, the common problem, step one. So for me, that was, wow, a life full of tragedy, suicide attempts, abuse, trauma, compulsions, addictions, weight that would go 4 stone up and then under, flirting with restriction, flirting with bulimia, but my home base was compulsive overeating, it was binging, it was trying to find ease and comfort in food. And, you know, that was actually a symptom, it wasn't a problem. And the symptom was I was completely spiritually starved, spiritually dead. I thought I was on my own in this life, and there was no God. Weirdly, I did grow up religious for the first 10 years of my life. I went to religious school, but I just pretty much decided that God was not for me. I was not worthy of this God. I wasn't a good enough, in this context, I wasn't a good enough Jew. And later on, I just thought, either I swung between, I'm too smart for God and religiosity, or it just, I'm not good enough for it. So it was really interesting to come into the rooms, you know, only about 18 months ago, and to hear everyone start talking about God, God this, God that. And, you know, it's such a fantastic crowbar with which to open that box for so many of them, you know, people like me who were agnostic at the time. To say it's a God of your understanding. The gift of desperation was truly alive in me when I walked in the rooms. My life was a disaster in every way, financially, spiritually, as a parent, as a daughter, as in creatively. I really thought there was nothing that could help me now, thank God. And that forced me into the rooms. Which I'd sort of heard about throughout the previous year. And my concept of God, the God of my understanding, which is not a God I understand, I hear that a lot, and I love it because it makes sense to me. Because in the beginning, I started playing around with images, especially in my step one days, images of Buddhas, and let's make, you know, hashtag me too, let's make it feminist, let's go to the goddess, why does it have to be a man, and all of that stuff. And through the the evolution of my spiritual practice through my, thank goodness, my sponsor pushing me to live in steps 10 and 11, even though I, you know, my abstinence was all over the place, and even though, you know, my faith was all over the place, to live in steps 10 and 11 so that every day I try and talk to God and to listen to God. So, and that's prayer and meditation, as well as recognizing when those churning, twisting, cruddish stuff that we have to deal with in step four, all that inventory, you know, resentments of the past, fear of the future, sexual inventory and ideal, what's going on at the moment in our relationship, all of that stuff, it just whoosh, it gets unblocked, but it builds up again. I've started thinking about it like my relationship with my teeth. I love getting my teeth cleaned, but I hate going to the dentist. But it's the same thing with this inventory work. It builds up again. My ego rebuilds itself. And I start, you know, even now, you know, I've just finished inventory and I was like a lunatic in the car getting here today. Like, what, thinking about running over people and like, what the fuck? Why did they build Belsize Park in such a weird way? It's just all wrong. Everyone, you know, everyone's wrong and I'm right. It builds up. It really builds up. So step one, common solution, this book. So depending on which fellowship you belong to, it can be so easy to have 24 different pieces of literature and just feel really, really, truly lost. But I'm really glad that I was guided to work with this as pretty much the only tool, because it's all there. It doesn't, I really don't mind changing the words here and there. It really doesn't bother me because the words in here, it doesn't matter that it's, you know, written in the 1930s. I actually find that beautiful that the wisdom gets passed on in that way. It makes it feel, I feel more connected that way to these guys. So step one at the bottom of the archway, willingness, honesty, really facing up to the unmanageability and the powerlessness that I have in my life. And then the cornerstone. Let's go to page 47 if you have a big book. So in the middle, we use our own conception of God, however limited it was. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderful, effective spiritual structure can be built. So I put the first stone onto the structure, the cornerstone, willingness to believe. And I'm on my way, and it's vertical for the first time in a long time. Everything feels very horizontal up till then, or backwards, going deep into the mud. And then for step three, we skip to the top of the structure, because that's where the strength is. That's where it all comes from, the death of self, the beginning of faith. So I go to page 62. I really love this page. It's so good. I might actually just have to read, she said compulsively. I have to read more. From selfishness. Selfishness, self-centeredness. That, I think, is the root of my troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, I step on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt me, seemingly without provocation, but I invariably find that at some time in the past I have made decisions based on self which later place me in a position to be hurt. And all of that comes out in the inventory process. So my troubles, I think, are basically of my own making. Thank God. This is not a stick to beat myself up with. This is a way out of jail. Because if the solution to my troubles lies outside of myself, I am constantly living a fear-based life waiting for someone to save my ass. It's not going to happen. people have this horrible way of having their own opinions, their own trajectories through life, and they won't bend to my will. And, you know, if only they would, then everything would be all right. So my troubles arise out of myself. And in my case, the compulsive overeating, for some of you, it may be restricting, it may be purging, it may be a combination, is an extreme example of self-will run riot. So you see, the book only really talks about the disease of addiction for the first 23 pages. The rest of the time, it's talking about our spiritual malady, our self-ego obsession that is the root of our troubles, our delusions, our fears. And that's what it deals with for pretty much the rest of the book. Above everything, we must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. And this is where I think it's very easy to underestimate food as a substance with which to abuse ourselves. It can kill slowly, or through self-loathing, it can kill quickly. Here in this building, as a teenager, I attempted suicide. I remember it very well, and I find it beautiful that I get to come here, not as a troubled teenager, but as, you know, a mother who hopes to bring her children to teenagehood in the best way I know how. So it can kill. Substance abuse of any kind can kill, whether it's through the substance itself or whether it's through our self-loathing and suicide. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Exactly. I can't do anything about it. I have to turn to my higher power. So this is not self-help. This is not like 12 easy stages and you too will have abstinence and the spiritual recovery. You know, that's full of action. And that's one of the paradoxes here, is that it is about turning to a higher power, but it's also about action, action. I'm the one who's got to make these damn lists, and I'm the one who's got to talk to someone about it, and I'm the one who's got to pray about it and meditate every day and keep turning and not let the tartar around my teeth build up again before I have to go to the hygienist and have that lovely clean feeling again. Many of us had moral, philosophical convictions galore, but I could not live up to them. I really thought I was a lovely, kind person before I joined this program. I thought I was maybe a bit of a broken victim, but generally very nice, pretty needless, wantless, very giving, pretty much a martyr to my whole family for sure. And then through some really robust inventory, I uncovered so many delusions about what I need to feel safe. I mean, honestly, there's some doozies this time around, only just a month ago that I discovered. I'll give you a few of my what we call objectionables. When we go through this way in the BBA way, we look for objectionables. I have so many incredible ones. No one else is allowed to have any opinions unless it's the same as mine. I'm convinced I know how everything will play out. I want to be in charge of my career in every way, including how big or small it is. I have preferences, others can't, and I really believe this stuff. I anticipate rejection by rejecting. That's so helpful, I can't tell you. Thinking recovery depends on other people and how they behave. What other people think is more important than the truth. Ouch. I need my mother to save me. I need my husband to save me. I'm very inferior, in fact, completely worthless. No, I'm really, really special and I'm perfect. So both extremes. I can never give myself a happy childhood. I'm damaged forever. And this one is just my favorite. I need history to be rewritten in order to be okay. Good luck with that. So I really thought I had moral and philosophical, and you know, and that's not to say that I've uncovered now the fact that I'm a horrible person. I've just now realised that I'm a person with varied traits, and that there's this middle ground now that I'm discovering, which has nothing to do with I'm a worthless piece of whatever or the best thing since sliced bread. Why don't people recognise that? It's that hallowed middle ground where I can live with my brothers and sisters and my family and my colleagues, in this state of, it's okay, thank you. And it really is okay. So even though everything can be a mess, because I've had this spiritual experience, I feel pretty much incredible. And for me, neutral and happy and normal is incredible most of the time, which for me is incredible. This is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Then we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be the director. All right, so, and this again, it's a paradox of thinking of God as like in charge of everything and I'm just this nothing. It's not. It's a partnership, right? I have to listen. I have to show up. I have to do stuff in order to hear what the guidance is. The most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone, right? This is the keystone, the cement that binds us, the cornerstone of challenging our agnosticism, and then the keystone to the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. So the top stone in an arch is the one that gives it its strength and structure. So just quickly, 4, 5, 6, and 7 is like a sort of ready, steady, go momentum. So you want to kind of just get on with it. You don't want to stay and I'm really shit and I've got so many delusions. Don't stay in there for any longer than you have to, because what's on the other side is pretty amazing. That step 7 moment where you feel like, whew, okay, my creator can now take all of me, good, bad, ugly, fabulous. It's all allowable, it's all doable. So whoosh, we get to the top. And then down the other side, it's also pretty quick. You just make a list of amends, you make the amends. Sometimes they're living amends, sometimes it's a letter. It's no big deal. Sometimes it is a big deal, and the things that you thought were going to kill you actually open you up to a whole new dimension. And then before you know it, you're living in steps 10, 11, and 12. And that's just talking to God, listening to God, and trying to be of service. So a prayer can be anything. Sometimes a prayer is like, God, please show me. God, please use me. And sometimes it's using the stuff that's in the book. And sometimes it's listening to someone else. And sometimes it's trying to help someone else. And this archway has changed me completely from the inside out. It's enabled me to face so much my mortality, my reality, and just the beauty of each day. And I am so grateful for the harmony and the clarity and the partnership which I have now with my God. And I am so grateful that this too is part of my recovery, being able to share this. Thank you so much for listening.